Let's do it.
To the right, 5 seconds to go in the first half. Dante fires deep to the left. Moss caught it at the 11, but now he pitches
look at
it.
This.
Demole Williams, touchdown!
You gotta be kidding me!
Welcome back to the Climbing the Pocket podcast. I am your host, Jason Brown, joined this evening by the full crew. We got the band back together. JR, what's going on, my man?
What's going on, man? Glad to be back.
And as always, next in line, we got our wide receiver, cornerback, lockdown specialist, and kickball player extraordinaire, Miles. What is going on, my man?
You know, coming off a hard loss yesterday, you know, I'm pretty upset about it, but we're going to move past it. We'll be back next week.
Oh, yeah. Damn.
Very Belichickian of you.
Just laughing at him. Just laughing at him. And you guys already heard, there's the man, the sexy prince. What's going on, man?
Hey, what up? What up? Y'all heard Miles get very Belichick on you. You know, going to move on from yesterday. On next week, I'll be there scoring runs.
Exactly.
Yeah, all right, all right, all right. Well, we got the whole crew back together. We got an action-packed show, a lot of topics to cover. Before we get to them, Yinka, do you have a random question for us this week, or are we jumping right into business?
Well, you guys always know I got a random question. Come on now. All right. Well, given the fact that we are in the summer of superhero movies, what would be y'all's superpower? I'll start it. My superpower would probably be, I've always wanted telekinesis. Be able to lift things with my mind.
Okay. All right. I mean, I'll go in a similar vein with you, I guess. I just want to, like Professor X, I want to be able to control what everyone's doing. I just want my legs to work. So if we can do that right there, I'm good.
So like, y'all know I'm not the biggest movie wizard in the world, but like the only superhero movie I've seen probably the last few years is Deadpool, and that movie was really good. So I guess just give me every power Deadpool has. He was awesome.
we'll say Miles' ability to regenerate. You know, he is QB1, so he's taking them hits. He needs his body to get it right real quick.
What about you, Miles?
Man, I don't even shoot. I guess I could just say fly. I do fly, or, you know, I'm a big Iron Man guy, so I kind of like, I mean, he doesn't have a superpower, but I kind of like what the suit brings. I'd probably say maybe even Spider-Man would be something cool too.
Might be like the Human Torch after this business trip you got going on.
You're telling me, man. For all that don't know, I'll be going to Arizona tomorrow for work, and it's supposed to be 115 degrees. So I'm not looking forward to that.
Ooh. Pray for Miles.
Yeah, pray for Miles.
We'll start a GoFundMe while you're gone on, you know, them third degree burns that you might get. So,
oh yeah, 115 ain't built. That's not team light skin weather right there.
That's not nobody's weather. Come on, man.
Well, Miles, JR, you guys have been out for a little bit here, and I know that JR's got some hot takes he wants to fire off. Takeaways from mini camp, OTAs. Things that he feels like he learned from what we've been able to get out of the highlight videos, the interviews, and just everything that we've been able to piece together from Snapchat and everything else. So JR, what are your big takeaways?
Well, obviously, of course, the biggest one is Teddy Bridgewater progressing a little bit faster than what a lot of people expected. We've seen the Hey Teddy videos that the team surprisingly put out a couple of weeks ago. So Teddy progressing, and we don't really know when he's going to be ready. I know a lot of us in here don't really want him necessarily to play next year, but we're pretty sure Teddy feels otherwise, but we'll see how it goes. But it's just good to see him progressing and getting healthy as the season goes along. It'll be interesting to see how the team handles the situation. Another one is the whole backfield situation. We know Latavius Murray is still out nursing that ankle surgery and just rehabbing back from that. Dalvin Cook and Jerick McKinnon have been looking good. We've been seeing the articles coming out about McKinnon putting on 10 plus pounds of muscle, which will help him last throughout the season, considering he's not an overly big guy. And we've heard rave reviews about Dalvin Cook and how good he's looked. I know Matt Vinsel and Andrew Kramer has some glowing reviews about him, just saying you see and hear about how good he is as far as on the film, and you read about it and hear others' opinion about it. But once you see it live in person, it kind of shocks you. So that's really good to hear about Dalvin Cook. And I think another big storyline is how Laquon Treadwell has looked and his improvement to this point. So Miles likes to say sophomore surge at this point, but it's looking good right now. But we have to remember that he's just in shorts and a jersey and a helmet right now. And, you know, those DBs aren't allowed to press up on him right now. We all know in here that that's been one of his biggest deficiencies to this point, being able to defeat press coverage consistently. So it'll be interesting to see if he keeps progressing. So those are really three big storylines that I took away from OTAs from an offensive point of view.
So on the Treadwell point, because you know, we had Matt Kohler on a couple weeks ago, and one of the things that he said, and you know, he and Judd and Ben were talking about it on the Purple Podcast recently, is watch what they say, but really believe what they do. And so with Treadwell, you know, the talk has been really, really positive. Everything that we've seen on the, you know, the highlights has been really positive. But the point that they made was that, you know, they still drafted two receivers. They went after Alshon. They brought in Michael Floyd, who they were expecting to be a part of the offense. Do you guys expect that they're going to make another move to bring another wide receiver in? Because it seems, even though that everything they're saying is really positive, that the team might still have some questions about, you know, relying on a guy who had one catch in his rookie campaign as that go-to third receiver, or potentially a guy who'd have to step up and start if, you know, Diggs or Thielen were to miss any time.
I think for me, I think when we had Matt Vinsel on earlier a couple weeks ago, I mentioned kind of the thing about drafting two wide receivers, and especially in the late rounds, the fifth and the seventh round with Adams and Coley, was you're replacing guys like Cordarrelle Patterson and Charles Johnson more so as more of an indictment toward Laquon Treadwell, in my opinion. Now the Alshon Jeffrey, Terrell Pryor, Michael Floyd moves have a little bit more to do with probably what, you know, a safety blanket for a Laquon Treadwell, you know, based off his rookie season, you know, bringing a guy that, you know, that can produce, but at the same time, you know, kind of wait and see what, if Treadwell can produce and if he can be that guy you know, you drafted him to be. So I don't expect them to make any additional moves if for some reason they do end up cutting Floyd or, you know, whatever happens with that whole situation. I kind of think if anything, your fallback plan, just, it goes back to guys like Jarius Wright. He can come in and produce. He can, you know, you have, if for some reason, you know, Treadwell continues to struggle through training camp and, you know, during the early parts of the season, you have, you know, Jarius Wright who could step in and, you know, move to the slot, and you could move your guy Diggs to the outside, and you kind of have a, you know, 1-2-3 punch there if that would be the case. So I think that's where I think a guy like Jarius Wright's a really good safety net, you know, veteran presence, is because he can be that, you know, safety blanket if a guy like, you know, Treadwell doesn't progress the way we're hoping he does.
Outside of Treadwell, Miles, did you have any other takeaways? You know that, you know, most of what you focus on is the wide receivers. Love and is your guy, your hashtag sophomore surge and the rest, but was there anything else that you been able to see so far from OTA's minicamp, highlights, anything like that?
Yeah, I mean, I've, you know, watched, you know, followvikings.com, you know, just, you know, I like to watch the highlights, like to figure out, see what's going on. You know, they have glowing reviews for second-year tight end David Morgan. We're hearing good things, you know, kind of in that fullback, Rhett Ellison kind of role. So it sounds like he's going to, you know, obviously, you know, in just helmets and shorts, you want to see what he can do with, you know, the shoulder pads on too. But he's a guy that I've, you know, we've heard good things about. So that's exciting. I think we're, you know, just overall, I think the second year class, you know, the 2016 draft class, I just expect to see a lot more growth and a lot more individual opportunities for those guys and for them to contribute. You know, you have Mackenzie Alexander, Laquon Treadwell, you know, just mentioned David Morgan. I'm not even going to say Willie Beavers, but we know, you know, Andy Benoit had a, you know, called him the what did he coin him? You got to help me out here, Jason. I know you remember. It doesn't matter. He coined him as a guy who is a player to watch on the offensive line, which an X factor, which is just wrong. So no.
Andy Benoit.
Yeah, Benoit. However you say his name. But overall, I just think the second year class from the 2016 draft class. I'm excited to see kind of how they progress. You know, Jayron Kearse, I didn't mention him either, but, you know, some of those guys, see how they do in their second season.
Yeah, sorry to leave you in the lurch like that, Miles. I had you on mute while I was looking it up, but you got it right, man. You got it right. It was the X Factor, Willie Beavers, coming in to save the day, rescue us along the Vikings' offensive line. What about you, Prince? Anything that you really took away from the OTAs, the highlights? Anything that you really wanted to that you'll be looking at or hoping to follow and track as we move into training camp?
Well, real quick, I think it's funny how you talked about Miles following the wide receivers, and then the next people that he talked about were people who were going to catch the ball as well. So, you know, Miles loves his what? But I would say the tight ends are definitely something I'm watching a little bit closer. I do want to see how Bucky Hodges steps up, see what way they're actually using him. That's going to be my focus when I go to training camp. Is I want to see how they're starting to use Bucky Hodges, you know, and then obviously how they're using David Morgan. I think that's going to be telling for how far along parts of this offense is. If, you know, Morgan can kind of step into that H-back role, you know, kind of do some Red Ellison type stuff. I think that'll fill maybe some potential weaknesses we might still have on the offensive line. I've been paying a lot of attention to what's been happening with the center battle. You know, Nick Easton has actually grabbed a lion's share of the, you know, the primary first team reps. So I know a lot of people weren't expecting him to be the starter, but I mean, it's looking like he might actually have the job right now. So we'll see how that progresses. Obviously, you know, I know Pat Elflein was supposed to kind of be a shoe-in for a lot of people, but
it won't take long.
I did really like Nick. I don't think it'll take long either.
I was just going to say, this is just part of that, you know, them giving the veteran guy before they just hand it over to the rookie.
Right.
But we'll see the same thing with Dalvin Cook. You know, he might not be the starter exactly right away, but, you know, he'll win that opportunity at some point.
Right.
I do think that as far as, I mean, I know it wasn't very much. I do think you did see some flashes of good. At least Nick Easton, I think, will still make the roster. Like I said, that's a battle that I'm definitely looking at more so than I actually am the right guard position, because I think once you have a solidified spot for that center, I think the right guard will more or less take care of itself, even though it is still kind of a weakness. So,
yeah, for me, I know that what I'll be looking at, and it's probably the position that I evaluate the worst or the most poorly, is really to see that the offensive line and see how that unit really does come together. So, yeah, once they get pads on, obviously we'll be able to get a little bit more information to see how, you know, an Elflein does hold up when he actually has to go against Linval, and Linval can actually, you know, really put hands on him and really, really give him a go. And really just to see how that group starts to come together, because, you know, as I started doing a little bit of digging, looking at some stats, you know, one of the things we are all, or many of us, or most of us are really counting on as helping the offense get better is the run game getting better. And the positive is that when I look back over the last 5 years, looking at Football Outsiders, you know, line stats for rushing, that teams that were as bad as we were last year, teams that are in that range typically improve their rank by about 10. So we're looking at going from, you know, 30th into that, you know, kind of 20th or so range from a run blocking perspective, which, you know, with a guy like Dalvin in the backfield, ideally, you know, that gets us to a place where we can at least have an average, slightly above average run game. So I'm really going to look to see how that all comes together, because, you know, we passed the ball a ton last year, and just the way that, you know, the offense seemed to go when we went to Shermer, I don't know if the pass game alone will be enough to get it done for us. So really hoping that line comes together so that, you know, we can really see what Dalvin is able to do, and he has a little bit more space to operate.
That 10, I guess, 10 ranking jump that you saw, were a lot of teams investing, I don't know, whether it be free agents or high draft picks and stuff into the running back position? Is that why that jump happened?
No. So this was more of a line stat. So it was looking at the run blocking prowess of the line. And so that jump was really about what the line was doing. And obviously there's interplay there. It's impossible to completely separate run blocking from the skill of the running back. But more often than not, when a team had a big jump, it was that they drafted someone early who ended up being really good, or they added a free agent or two who ended up being really good, who really helped them turn things around. So this was just looking at how well the offensive line was blocking to get the running back to the second level. So really, you know, of the total yards a running back got per carry, how much of that was he getting before anyone put hands on him because the line was opening up space for him? So, I mean, there's at least hope that, you know, historically anyway, teams have tended to move up from where they were based on investment, and we did make investments both in the draft and in free agency. So, you know, ideally we're one of those teams that does kind of move up that at least to the average, which would get us into, you know, at least a decent or serviceable run game. So that's what I'm looking for. The last show we recorded, Father's Day, you know, Miles, JR, for family commitment reasons, couldn't be here. But we're going to use Sunday and some of the things we were going to talk about there and Father's Day as our transition, as our segue into talking about America's favorite father. We're going to talk about LeVar Ball because everybody's got some takes on LeVar Ball. Some people, he makes them really, really angry. I'm not really sure why, but he makes some people really, 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 really upset. So we're going to have a little conversation, talk about LeVar Ball, talk about Lonzo, and then from there we're probably going to spend the rest of the show talking about the NBA. So if basketball's not your thing, you should still listen because, you know, it's a fantastic sport, and the offseason is incredible. It's crazy, and we're going to talk about all that stuff. But before we get all there, JR, let me know, what are your thoughts on LeVar, Lonzo, and just all that's been going on with that family leading into this draft that's happening tomorrow?
So my biggest thing is, am I a LeVar Ball fan? No. Is he a smart businessman? Absolutely. Is Lonzo a good player? Absolutely. Is he going to help a team next year? Absolutely. I think the hardest thing for people to do is to differentiate Lonzo and LeVar. LeVar has pretty much been the voice for Lonzo, and Lonzo really hasn't been his own person. So this Foot Locker commercial, I believe it was the first time we really heard Lonzo actually speak out for himself. And I thought it was a genius idea how they tied it into Father's Day and how they put it all together with the draft. You know, they had Jonathan Isaac and I believe somebody else was on there. I can't remember who it was. I believe it was De'Aaron Fox on there with them. So the hardest thing for people to do is to differentiate the two. And why I say Lonzo would be perfect for the Lakers is because the Ball family and Lonzo as a player as well. The Lakers haven't had that star power from a player since the Shaq and Kobe days, in my opinion. And we know the Lakers are all about showtime. They're all about money. When it comes down to the end of the day, they're all about money and what's going to sell tickets. As bad as you want to hate LeVar Ball, if the Lakers draft him, he's going to sell tickets. The big baller brand, money and profit is going to skyrocket just because of Lonzo. And LeVar. LeVar is going to have plenty of talk shows he's going to go on, and he's going to feed off of Lonzo. But LeVar, since Lonzo has been at UCLA, LeVar has never intervened. And what I mean by that is he's never came in UCLA's locker room and told the coach what to do like he did when Lonzo was in high school. And I think a lot of people don't really dig into the story of that. They just go off of what LeVar has said to this point and what he's shown to do when Lonzo was in high school. Yes, he made bold predictions on First Take about them winning a national championship and Lonzo being the best player in the country. And I love him doing that. It shows that he's confident in the son. I think he's a great father from what he's shown. And a lot of people have taken it out of context, in my opinion. Some of the stuff he said has been bad, of course. You know, he made a comment about Kyrie's mother, which crossed the line, of course, since he's deceased. Of course, he crossed the line with that. But, I mean, as a businessman, I think he's a genius, in my opinion. I've said it a million times. And he's all about, every time he talks, he said, I'm going to speak it into existence. He's just a confident guy, and that's just his personality. And I think it fits perfectly with the Lakers. That's what they need. They need Lonzo, and they need the Ball family because they don't have a headliner on that team right now. And that's what they desperately need. It's all about showtime with the Lakers. And I think the Ball family and Lonzo brings that to them, being that he's already a hometown kid as well. So that's another thing that helps out as well. So I like Lonzo's fit, and I love LeVar's fit on the Lakers.
Well, especially, I think, JR, just to piggyback off that with the Lakers and Lonzo Ball potentially going there, it sounded like he's going to be their choice, but they just moved D'Angelo Russell. So that's they just kind of segued that move. You know, it's a nice, easy transition for Ball to to kind of move in and take that role that, you know, D'Angelo Russell was taking over.
Yeah, it definitely clears the way for them to actually take ball. So, and I don't think Fox would really necessarily be a good fit for him, for them, just because he's pretty much the same player that D'Angelo Russell is. Russell shoots it a little bit better than what Fox does, but they're very similar players. But with Lonzo, you get a guy that's a true facilitator, and he's a scorer as well. I like to compare him to Jason Kidd a lot. That's who he reminds me of. So I think Lonzo would be a great fit.
Hey, Prince, what do you think? I know that we've had some off-air conversations about LeVar Ball and Lonzo and all the rest. I guess, what are your takes on, that whole situation, kind of how LeVar has positioned himself and kind of the way people have reacted to LeVar, Lonzo, and everything that goes along with all of that?
I think the funny thing about LeVar is, I mean, we all know that father or that parent that has that amount of confidence in their kids. You know, behind closed doors, LeVar isn't really saying anything publicly that most parents aren't saying to their kids privately. You know, you're the best. You should get more, you know, you should get more recognition. You know, you keep grinding, all that stuff. But it's like, you know, just like JR says, he speaks it, you know, publicly. He speaks its truth. I'm more so on the side of being okay with what LeVar is saying. You know, sans the Kyrie mother comments and stuff.
Because can we pause for just one quick second? Because I mean, I know it's a tradition and everything, but like, you literally started your adventure as soon as we went to you on the, like, where are you right now?
I'm in my apartment, a complex, somewhere. I had to run an errand, but anyways.
Man, that ADHD, bro, I swear.
I'm always on the move, y'all. You can't stop it. You can only hope to contain it. That's what you gotta do. But as far as the grind with LeVar and what he's doing, I prefer
And see, and just like that, Yinka then put himself in the elevator. I'm sure what he was going to say was really important, but he's gone now because, you know.
Y'all can't hear me?
Nah, we can't hear you. I'm a little upset with myself.
Hear me now.
For not taking a screenshot of your face the way it froze when you went away. Okay,
anyways, what I was saying is I'm more so on the side of that. I'm actually happy LeVar is stepping out. I mean, there's just something about, you know, having a father figure that's in there. I mean, we have a lot of these NBA players who's, I mean, personally speaking, that they don't have a lot of their fathers at the forefront of either their career or personal lives, all that stuff. So to actually see a father who's there for his children, who's kind of become the face, who's taken all the heat from stuff so Lonzo can just focus on basketball and being the best player that he is. I think I would love to see more of that in the NBA, more fathers involved into their kids, you know, not just careers, but just personal life and things that they love and enjoy doing and helping them to excel at all those things.
Yeah, and that's a great point. And I think one of the things that I have found weird with this coverage is that a lot of the negativity, and yeah, I mean, we can just say it. I mean, LeVar can be a bit of an asshole at times, but with some of the negative coverage that you're seeing for Lonzo, you would think he was the guy that has kind of off-court concerns, and he's never been in any trouble, but there's more negativity swirling around him than you get from like a Josh Jackson or something like that, which I find really odd. I mean, dude's dad is whatever, but the kid, the actual person who's going to be going into the draft, hasn't been problematic at all at any point in his playing career. So just that part of the coverage I found very, very strange.
And then another funny.
I think that's purposeful, right? Because knowing that there's going to be scrutiny behind a lot of, you know, behind your kid and whatnot. Again, why not get in front of that? Why not be the person who has to take majority of that? Because think about the confidence that gets knocked and the, you know, sometimes going down the wrong path and whatnot, just for all the sheer criticism that you get for everything that you do. But again, LeVar stepping in front of that. He's essentially shielding his kid from all of that just so that, again, he can be the best player that he can be.
And another thing, how many times have we seen a parent's, you know, interference ruin a team's success in the NBA? You rarely ever see that. So I think it's really overblown as far as what he's doing for his kids.
Yep, and Amin El-Hassan, who worked for the Suns, now works for ESPN. I was listening to him, I think Sunday morning on his show, and he was like, LeVar doesn't even rank in the top 10 worst parents that he's had to deal with. So, yeah, I think it's like, you know, as JR said, from a marketing perspective, it's brilliant. I mean, we're living the age where you have the Kardashians become, you know, multimillionaires for basically just, you know, this kind of shock nonsense. You know, Trump is president. You know, and LeVar is out there. He's about to sell a bunch of big baller brand sneakers. So, you know, it seems to be the new American way. But with that, I mean, you know, I'm looking at Twitter because my boy just sent me something talking about Phil Jackson about to cause a riot in New York, which had me running through the Twitter feed to see what was going on. But thus far, I mean, this week anyway, the NBA has gone crazy. Like, it just seems like, you know, with all the teams realizing how far ahead Golden State and Cleveland are, teams are just going all out now to make moves to try to improve themselves or to get themselves into the best situation to be able to make a big splash in free agency this year or next year. I guess start with you, JR. What move have you found that you like the most so far, and what are your thoughts on the NBA offseason so far in general?
You know, the NBA offseason is always a circus. It's actually my favorite offseason. I like it more than the NFL offseason just because there's so many moving parts and teams really understand how valuable those lottery picks are in the NBA. And they understand any pick after the lottery is really a throwaway, in my opinion. You have guys that pan out, so to speak, some from time to time outside of the lottery. But you really get a lot of value in those lottery picks. And what you see is teams are scrambling all around in those top 15 picks to try to get in the lottery because they know those are usually the best players in the draft. You know, sometimes you get lucky and you get a Draymond Green or Isaiah Thomas in the second round, but those guys are huge outliers from time to time. So I love the NBA offseason. My favorite move so far is what the Lakers did yesterday, unloading D'Angelo Russell and Timothy Mozgov and getting back the extra first-round pick and getting Brooke Lopez as well. So that was actually my favorite move. And what I loved about it is what we see is Magic is really clearing space for 2018 to make a run at you-know-who, LeBron James. That's what he's all about doing right now. He understands that they're not going to be very good next year. And his attempt to get Paul George and LeBron James, it seems to have legs right now just because he cleared that cap space. He knows Brooke Lopez really – he's on the expiring deal next year. He probably won't re-sign with the Lakers. He's just a placeholder right now. And you get rid of D'Angelo Russell to clear the way for Lonzo Ball. So that's been my favorite move so far. And, you know, there kind of was a riot down here yesterday with Dwight Howard, who's basically a throw-in for trades right now, getting traded to the Charlotte Hornets. But I'm not a Dwight fan at all. So it was funny, though, just seeing him get traded, especially right in the middle of a tweet that he sent out.
I think that was like, you know, just to jump in, I think that was probably my favorite moment yesterday, that Dwight Howard starts a Twitter Q&A. One of the first comments was somebody quote tweeting it being like, man, you about to get traded. And then he actually got traded. And then the Twitter Q&A just stopped. I was like, man, that's cold-blooded, man.
His career is nosedive. Ever since he stepped foot in the Staples Center, it's been downhill from there. But he'll be a good player for Charlotte. We love Kemba Walker around here. He's a good player. Nicholas Batum, I mean, he's a good, I guess, second star, if you want to call it that. I don't really necessarily call him a star, but he's a decent NBA player. The guy's going to get you 20 a night. Dwight, he'll be a good center for the Hornets. And, I mean, we all know the Hornets really aren't going anywhere. They'll be a fringe playoff team at best. I enjoy the games, but I know they'll be a fringe playoff team at best. But Dwight was a good acquisition for him, and I like him paired with Kemba.
Is he overrated? Miles, that was a conversation that was going kind of back and forth this morning when I opened up Twitter. Folks, you know, talking about Dwight, and you know the internet hates Dwight, but then Jamel Hill and some other folks from ESPN were kind of listing off Dwight's stats and his accomplishments. But it was really a strong back and forth. Like, what are your thoughts? Is Dwight overrated?
Yeah, I saw someone compare him to the NBA version of T.O., which I thought was a little much. But I mean, I haven't really gone into the stats the way they did, but I mean, he was probably the best defensive, you know, big man in the game for, you know, however many years in Orlando. And then, you know, he makes his moves. Once he left Orlando, though, things started to kind of just plummet, which was unfortunate because I liked his game when he was in Orlando. I liked the way he played. He had a really good personality off the field – or off the court, I should say. So it's a tough one just because of the way his career's gone. It's just you would kind of expected him to kind of get back into it at some point, especially with some of those good teams like Houston he was on and everything like that. But it just never seemed to work out once he left Orlando. So I don't know if I'd call him overrated, but I don't know if I'd call him as good as what he's been advertised up to this point now.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I know this isn't something we actually prepped for, but after going and looking at Twitter here, it really does look like Phil Jackson is out here beating the streets trying to trade Kristaps Porzingis for potentially Josh Jackson or some other guy that he can get in the lottery.
I really think Phil's desperate to get rid of Melo, Carmelo Anthony, and so he's at that point, I'll trade anybody and everybody and make this team terrible so Melo will leave. And I don't think Melo cares. So, I mean, I feel like it's just a tactic, ploy that Phil's trying to do to get rid of Melo because Melo's basically got all the control saying, you know, you can't trade me. So, I don't know. That's just my quick thought.
Y'all going to make me have a Stephen A. rant. Phil Jackson collecting a check, man. It's sad to see.
So is Melo.
Sad to see. I don't think people understand how much Phil is getting paid, though. Do y'all know how much Phil Jackson is getting paid?
No, man, how much?
So the second highest paid GM, which is Maj Ujiri for the Raptors, he makes $3 million a year. Phil Jackson makes 12.
What?
Yeah.
It's the at home.
Yeah, he's the highest paid GM in the NBA, and it's not even close. And the Knicks have arguably gotten worse since he's taken over. Besides drafting Porzingis, he really hasn't done anything. The Melo trade really didn't work out, in my opinion, just because they haven't had any playoff success. So without Kristaps Porzingis, he really has nothing to his name as a general manager. And as much as he's getting paid, he's stealing, man. He's stealing.
What do you think about my little spew about, you know, maybe he's trying to, you know, get rid of Porzingis because he wants to get rid of Melo and, you know, he's at the point he wants to get rid of Melo bad. Like it's gotten to the point where, I mean, he would trade his franchise cornerstone player to potentially try to, just to get rid of Melo. Like, I don't think Melo would really at this point cares because he's just like you said, he's collecting a check. So he's back home. So
man, I think it's Phil's fault though.
I think Phil's trying to get fired. Oh, yeah. I mean, at this point, because Dolan came out pretty strong. I can't remember when it was in the season. I think it might have been. Now, I don't remember exactly what point it was in the season, but Dolan came out pretty strong saying that, you know, Phil's our guy. You know, I made a commitment to Phil, and I'm going to, you know, honor my obligations and all that stuff. But, like, there's nothing about the way Phil Jackson is behaving that makes you think he actually wants that job. Like, he didn't go out on the road to scout guys in person. He didn't go watch guys during the NCAA tournament. Like, Phil seems to be a guy who is trying as hard as he can to get fired. Like, you're really going to – like, Kristaps Porzingis is the only reason someone who is a Knicks fan has to be excited about the next season, the future, anything. And Phil's out here like, man, yeah, we're going to let him walk. Like, it just – he doesn't seem like a man who actually wants to keep his job. And he keeps upping the ante. Like, first he went in on Melo, like, right after the season – and now he's going in on Kristaps. Like, it's just crazy that, yeah, that he's really all of his best players. Like, you don't see this in basketball where anyone really goes at their best players like this publicly and keeps their job in the long run. So, it's wild to me that, you know, the Knicks are being run like this and that Phil Jackson has been so terrible at this job of GM.
Collecting the check, man. Sad to see. And, I mean, I don't blame Melo for staying in New York. Why? Phil Jackson gave him a no trade clause. That's your fault. You shouldn't have gave him that if you knew you were going to end up wanting to get rid of him in the future. I don't think no NBA player should have a no trade clause. That's just my opinion, just because they decline very rapidly. And I like to use Dwayne Wade as an example. We knew Dwayne Wade was going to opt into that $24 million option with the Bulls. because he knew he wasn't going to get any that much money anywhere else. So I really don't understand why these NBA teams give these guys these huge player options or these no-trade clauses, knowing potentially that they would decline soon. So I'm not mad for Melo for staying in New York just because that's what you gave me. I'm at home. I'm collecting the check. My kids live here, and I'm from here. So why should I do you a favor and leave? You gave me a no-trade clause. So, right. I mean, if I was Melo, I'd ride it out too.
Right. And, well, if Jason's right too, you know, Phil's trying to get fired, they fire him. I mean, he's still collecting that check too. So, yeah. Like, he can go – he literally – if he gets fired, he literally just goes home and he's collecting a check for doing nothing. Like, I mean, he's basically doing that now, but it's crazy.
Yeah, Phil trying to get out of here on his Mike Brown.
Phil ain't got nothing to prove. He's still living off his Bulls legacy. He'll have that forever. So, yeah. I mean, he ain't got no pressure to win.
So, Prince, I know we've been going kind of back and forth pretty heavy on this one here. I guess I know you're not a Knicks fan, but, you know, what are your thoughts on all that's going on here? Do you have any sympathy for him? What are your thoughts on what Phil's doing with the team, where it sounds like he's trying to burn it all down?
It is. And when I heard that Kristaps was potentially going to get traded, I kind of had the same sentiment as you, Jason. Like, I don't know if Phil Jackson wants to play. He wants to be a coach anymore. I don't think that he wants to be around basketball. But, you know, I think there were some rumors as far as were there some rumors around, can someone clarify, rumors around Knicks and the Wolves potential trade stuff? Do y'all hear anything about that?
I don't know. I have to leave that to Miles. I don't really follow any basketball dudes.
I think it's just there's probably been, you know, phone calls. I don't think anything – Phil probably would want someone like Carl Anthony Towns or Andrew Wiggins, obviously. I mean, you get a guy like Porzingis, yeah. you want, you know, something really big in return. So there might have been talks, but I don't really think there's anything of substance there because you'd have to give up a lot to get a guy like Kristaps.
I'd trade anybody on the roster for Porzingis, not named Carl Anthony Towns.
Oh, I was about to say. Yeah, I'm with you. I thought you were about to say everybody. I'm like.
No, not for Cat, no.
Yeah.
You guys would trade Wiggins?
Absolutely.
Boy, that was quick, man.
Absolutely.
I'm not even just for like Kristaps, but just like, you know, maybe someone that's not maybe closer to Kristaps.
I'm not doing it for Butler. I'm not trading Wiggins for Butler, but yeah. I'm trading Wiggins.
You can find another Wiggins before you find another Porzingis.
Okay. All right. Well, we're talking about one really bad GM here, which is a perfect transition for us. Is Dan Gilbert the worst, but also the luckiest owner in the NBA?
Yes.
Because even now, what is he doing? Like, Griffin was making phone calls, trying to make trades to make the team better, and he fired him without talking to LeBron first. Like, what's going on with that situation?
So, Dan Gilbert is that girlfriend that gets caught in the moment, and he does things whatever is on his mind at the moment. That when I think of Dan Gilbert, that's what I think of. So I'm pretty sure we've all had that girlfriend to where she gets mad and just goes off in the moment. Let's say you did something by mistake. That wasn't really bad. And she just says, oh, I don't want to be with you no more. And just goes on this huge rant. When I think of Dan Gilbert, that's what I think of. And that's what happened with David Griffin. The team didn't win a championship this year, but I thought he put a solid roster together. No team Griffin could have put together this year was going to beat the Warriors if we're being realistic. And I thought he did a great job. I mean, he picked up some veterans that were kind of worn down or run-of-the-mill guys, but, I mean, there really wasn't anybody that they could have picked up at the time. I thought Kyle Korver was a great pickup at the time. We said LeBron wanted to be surrounded with shooters. They needed a backup point guard. He went out and got Darren Williams, who I thought was an okay signing at the time. They really didn't have a lot of choices at the time, but, I mean, everybody thought that was a decent move. It wasn't the best, but it was the best that he could have got at the time. With Dan Gilbert, we've seen, even with the LeBron situation when he went to Miami, I don't know if you guys read that letter, but it was really bad. And LeBron actually forgave him for that. And me personally, there's no way I could have forgave him for that.
So,
but
JR, just on that point, because this was something that actually LeBron talked about recently on, you know, he owns a majority stake in Uninterrupted. And LeBron talked about it recently. And the way he talks about Dan Gilbert, I don't know that he's actually forgiven him, because he still doesn't refer to him by name. And in the interview or on the podcast when he was talking, like, he basically went in more detail than I think he has ever gone in about that whole situation, talking about how, you know, Dan Gilbert disrespected him, disrespected his name, disrespected his family, and then continued in that to talk about how his mom and his wife didn't want him to go back to Cleveland. So if you're a Cavs fan and you're hearing all that, like, what are you thinking about next offseason or next year? Like, with LeBron being that kind of forthright about how much he dislikes ownership and the owner just getting rid of the coach that LeBron, not the coach, the GM that LeBron said that he wanted to have stick around.
If you go back to when LeBron first got in the league, just think about how many times they showed Dan Gilbert sitting courtside on TV. He always has that same seat where he sits directly beside the Cavs bench, kind of under the goal, kind of staggered a little bit. That's kind of his seat for every game. Now go back to when LeBron came back to Cleveland this year. How many times have you seen them show Dan Gilbert in that seat? Hardly ever. And him and LeBron, you've rarely ever seen a picture or a video of them together. I really haven't seen one at all since LeBron's first stint in Cleveland. I don't think they have the best relationship in the world, and I think LeBron is kind of his own person at this point as far as his brand. He's all about LeBron James and trying to get his brand out there, because he's coming out and said he wants to be a billionaire one day. He wants to be an NBA owner one day, and I think that's kind of where his mind is right now, and LeBron is all about expanding his brand at this point. So Dan Gilbert is kind of like a coworker to him at this point, and just the guy that's there in the building. That's just my opinion. He's never spoke glowingly about the guy, and if you don't ever bring Dan Gilbert up around him, he won't bring him up personally. He talks about David Griffin and the great job that he did all the time. He even put up a great tweet yesterday thanking Griffin and that he's gonna miss him. So I think Dan Gilbert is just the guy in the building for him, and I don't think he'll think twice about him if he was to leave Cleveland next year.
Well, and plus, I mean, Dan Gilbert's got to know that LeBron's leaving after the season. Like, he knows. So he's probably at that point where he's like, well, I'm sick of spending all this money. I mean, might as well. I mean, it's going to implode. We're going to be terrible for the next however many years because LeBron's not coming back. LeBron's not going to, you know, he's going to move on. And, you know, what do I need to do, you know, for my franchise to kind of weather that storm? Because he kind of, you know, with going all in with bringing LeBron, you know, with LeBron coming back and trying to win those championships, I mean, they got the one, which is big, but, you know, they've kind of put themselves in a really tough situation with all that cap money and all that money they just shelled out to everybody. So I feel like Dan Gilbert's kind of just at that point where he's like, well, shoot, I mean, you're leaving. Why am I going to continue to, you know, go all in just for, you know, for you if I know you're going to be gone here in a year?
Griffin leaving was the beginning of the end, though.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Hey, Yinka, what are your thoughts on your man Kyrie saying that if he doesn't get indications that LeBron's going to stick around, that he's also going to ask for a trade, or at least the rumors that came out the other day?
I wouldn't say if I was Kyrie and LeBron's leaving. Like, who else he has? I mean, if we looked at what happened in the in this last playoff series, I mean, all it was essentially it was Bron on Kyrie. You know, when Bron wasn't hitting, Kyrie had to hit and whatnot. So I'm okay with Kyrie coming to Minnesota and being that guy if he wants to. It just means that it means I can train with him, get closer, learn all his moves. You know, maybe they can think about drafting me or something. But no, it's, in all seriousness, there's, in my opinion, there's no reason Kyrie should stay in Cleveland at all.
Hey, Wiggins and Rubio for Kyrie right now. Let's go.
Whoa.
Yeah, I would.
Y'all out here talking about the people's champ, Rubio.
No,
I'm a Rubio guy, but I would do that trade in a heartbeat.
Man. Are y'all gonna be able to walk the streets tomorrow without here talking about trading Ricky Rubio? Because based on reading Vikings Twitter,
I'm a big Rubio.
Ricky
guy.
Rubio is arguably a top five point guard in this league.
Well, I mean, he's got some.
The thing with Ricky Rubio,
I would go that far.
You will win some games with Ricky Rubio as your point guard. It will happen. I mean, all the things that he does well, and the things that don't always show up on the stat sheet, I think that's what contributes to the Wolves being in some of these games that they actually can win. Now, where it gets tough is when we start getting into some of that playoff play, where you will need Rubio to, you know, start stepping up, maybe put up, you know, 30 points a game, you know, have some triple doubles and be able to take over, you know, maybe when they're, you know, double, triple teaming Cat. And Ricky's just not that guy. I think he's ceiling. He's very, very close. And that ceiling needs to be a lot higher than it is for. Well,
he doesn't need to be he doesn't need to be the number two scorer on the team. That's not his role. But I think he does a lot of really good things that, you know, you don't see in the stat sheet. You know, he makes plays around him a lot better. I'm not calling him a top, you know, a top tier point guard or anything like that. But I think, like you said, I think the Timberwolves can win with him. I think for me, it'd have to be a good enough trade to get rid of him. I'm not looking to just get rid of him because for what? I mean, you're not. Who are you going to replace him with at that point, you know? So
not done, not yet.
Right, not done. Not Levine's not a point guard, so none of those guys. Tyus Jones isn't a number one point guard, so
no.
So we backtrack now. Are we keeping Ricky Rubio?
I said for the right deal. I'm not for the sake of trading him just to trade him. I think that's a waste. What's the
me either?
Like that Wesley Matthews thing that came out earlier today with. You know, with the Mavs trading him, swapping the 7th and 9th pick for Wesley Matthews and Ricky Rubio, like what would be the point of that? That wouldn't do anything
at all.
So, like that's what I'm saying. Like, don't trade him just to trade him. You know, do it for the right reasons. Do it for the right players. So, I don't know.
It was kind of like I agree with Miles, not like with the whole Derrick Rose thing that was going up.
Oh man, that would have been
last year, or whatever. That's the thing. It's like. I agree with Miles. If you want to, you know, if you want to have him and like another player, whatever package deal, or maybe even a pick, that's good. But make sure you're getting some sort of return, you know, immediate impact type player.
So I think we're coming to the end of the basketball talk today. I guess my final question here, JR, for you, if you had to kind of place bets on what the first 5 picks in this draft are going to look like tomorrow, how you think it's going to go? Oof.
This is off the top of my head. We know who's going 1. It'll be Markelle Fultz to the Sixers. I say Lonzo Ball would be 2. Now, to the Lakers. On the subject of that, I really hope they have like a camera just for LaVar Ball if the Lakers don't pick him.
That well, would what, be they actually, what they have going on right now is, because I just actually saw that on Twitter, is that LaVar has a documentary crew following him around right now. So there will be footage on LaVar if the Lakers don't select Lonzo, which will be priceless, I'm sure.
Hey, must-see TV right there.
Yeah, the memes will be hilarious if they don't pick Lonzo.
People already have those memes locked and loaded.
Oh, yeah.
They're waiting.
Absolutely.
So three. The internet's undefeated.
It is. So 3, this kind of where the draft starts for me. I think it's between 2 players for the Celtics. It'd either be Jason Tatum or Josh Jackson. And Josh Jackson kind of seems to be blowing off the Celtics for whatever reason. They didn't even work him out. He didn't want to work out for him. I don't know what's really going on with that. I don't know if he even really wants to go there, and that's kind of why he's blowing them off. So I think they'll end up taking Tatum at 3, the Celtics. Just because they need a guy that can score. They have a bunch of athletic guys who can't shoot. They have Avery Bradley. They have Crowder. And somebody else I can't come to my head right now. But they just have a Jaylen Brown. That's the other guy I'm thinking. They just have a bunch of athletic guys that can't shoot. 4, I think Josh Jackson will end up going to the Suns. I mean, the Suns of the Suns, they're kind of just a team that's just out there playing basketball to me. I kind of forget about them. But they have a good franchise cornerstone guy, Devin Booker, I think. But other than that, I mean, the Suns of the Suns, they haven't really been much since the Steve Nash and Stoudemire and Joe Johnson days. So, and I think 5 would be Jason's guy, De'Aaron Fox. He's a guy that's very well spoken. And, you know, the Kings need that. They need a face of the franchise guy now that Boogie Cousins has moved on to the Pelicans. They have a decent little player in Buddy Hield, who I think is going to end up being good. And I think De'Aaron Fox will complement him very well. A guy that I compared to John Wall. He has to improve his shot a little bit. Right now he's not very good at all from 3, but very explosive. Ball handling is extremely good, and I think he'll end up being a very good NBA player. So that's the 5 guys I think that are going to go top 5.
Nice, nice, nice. I guess y'all agree with that, or you guys have anyone else you think would or should kind of sneak into that top five?
I have no idea, but I want to know. All I care about, honestly, is about I want to see LeVar Ball or Lonzo Ball, obviously. But my biggest thing is the Timberwolves. So, yeah, who do you think that the Timberwolves should take? I've heard Jonathan Isaac.
I've heard Isaac.
Yeah, that's the name. But I'm hearing he might go a little higher than seven.
Yeah, if he slips past the Magic, I think they should be all over him. But another guy to watch out for is Lauri Markkanen. It's the guy from Arizona.
Yeah, I've heard that name, yeah.
I think it's between Isaac or Markkanen. Another guy that could sneak in is Zach Collins, the center from Gonzaga. Mm-hmm. I think it's between those three guys. I mean, the Timberwolves need a four. They need a power forward that can play defense and
A stretch four.
Yeah. A guy that can, you know, go out and shoot on the perimeter, and a guy that can play some defense as well. So it's going to be a big man, whether it's Collins, Isaac, or Markkanen. I think it'll be between those three guys.
Yeah, and I guess last, you know, we'll just keep the firing squad on JR here because, you know, he's also, you know, point guard one, Mr. NBA around here as well. Who's the player that might not be getting a lot of burn, a lot of buzz right now that you think might have some superstar potential that's not, you know, a top – consensus top 1, 2, 3 pick in this draft?
So he's a guy I've been pumping up on Twitter a little bit too. I've got to see him play a lot. He grew up around this area in North Carolina. He's from Fayetteville. End up going to NC State, and that's Dennis Smith Jr. He's a guy that I like a lot. It reminds me a ton of Eric Bledsoe, that kind of undersized, muscular point guard that plays very strong, very explosive. Decent shot, can be a little bit better. Ball handling is pretty good right now for the most part. Do I think he'll be a superstar? I do not, but I think he'll be a star. I think he's going to be a star in the NBA. I hope he ends up on a team. Don't take this personal. I hope he ends up on a team like the Knicks. I think the Knicks would be a good situation for him just because I think they need a point guard. They need to move on from Derrick Rose, and they need some offensive production to help out Melo, and I think that's a good situation where he can step in right away and thrive.
Awesome, awesome. Well, as we wrap things up today, Mr. Saxy Prince, you know, man got put on over there at Daily Norseman and then just can't stop, won't stop putting out all that fire content for us. What you got lined up for us here, Prince? What's coming up next for you?
I have a few things in the works right now. Camp battles, I'm going to kind of dig into that a little bit. I'm also looking at quarterback production in the first 3 years, just to throw out some tendencies that I've seen. Just kind of average out some stats. And yeah, those are the two that I really have in pipeline right now.
Awesome. That QB one sounds interesting. We have to get into that one when we got a little bit more time, maybe on the next pod. JR, how about yourself? I saw you really, really quickly there tease an article kind of in the midst of you being attacked for something about Sam Bradford or something. So what you got going on next?
Yeah, so on Friday, I'll be releasing a Sam Bradford article. And just going down a list of things that he needs to do or prove in order to show that he can be a long-term answer for the Vikings under center. So it's a really good article. I enjoyed writing it. And I kind of went back to last season to give some exact examples of where he needs to improve in order to prove that he can be the long-term answer for the Vikings.
Why do you hate Sam Bradford?
I don't hate Sam Bradford. I just don't trust Sam Bradford.
Okay. I think that's fair. I think that's fair. There's some folks who probably be coming for you on this one here. They love to take shots at you quietly on the internets because, you know, you have not fallen head over heels in love with our journeyman quarterback, Sam Bradford. But, you know, I plan on looking at your mentions after you drop this article. Should be good times. Good times. Miles, how goes the wedding planning?
I mean, we're in that, like, lull stage right now where everything's just so making sure everything, you know, making sure my wedding party's getting there. Their tuck stuff figured out, you know. We're going to finalize our cake stuff this weekend when I get back from Arizona. So just a lot of little stuff that you know, got to make sure gets done, and it's coming quick.
How often are you guys thinking about just running away and eloping at this point now?
Every day. I wish we could do it every day. I beg and plead. But I'll be in Mexico this time next month, so it's all good.
That's a beautiful thing. Just make sure they got their good Wi-Fi. Well, yeah, that's it for this week. Thanks for tuning in for another episode of the Climbing the Pocket podcast. We will be back probably over the weekend with our takes on what happened in the NBA draft. Hopefully the Vikings players will stay out of the news during this time here in the offseason. And yeah, we'll talk to you soon. Thanks for tuning in.